Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for coyote hunting, fishing, and more.
We're calling West Texas, and we're filming, and we called 36 coyotes in one night.
3 years ago, I had in one morning 6 bucks that were 3.5 and older within 50 yards of my stand. 6 different bucks, one morning.
It was in October, went made my first coyote stand, me and my cousin. And very first freaking stand, guys, we caught up 7 coyotes. 7 coyotes.
Florida itself is a fisherman's paradise. We stick out in the middle of the water, man. There's water everywhere.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
This podcast brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Locally owned and operated out of Attica, Michigan, Predator Hunter Outdoors will keep you hunting when the sun goes down. Predator Hunter Outdoors has something for every budget and experience level, including lights, night vision, and thermal, as well as a full line of tripods, mounts, and predator calls. Look them up on Facebook and Instagram at Predator Hunter Outdoors, or visit their webpage at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code LIGHT for 20% off light products, and TRIPOD for 10% off tripods and mounts. With today's technology, hunters in the field have more tools than ever to maximize their outdoor experiences. One of those tools is a Grand Rapids, Michigan-based HuntWise app. The HuntWise Pro app is loaded with features including property lines, landowner data, windcast, huntcast, over 250 map layers including 3D maps, a localized rut indicator, as well as discounts of 20% off various name brand products. Step up to the Elite membership and you will get all of that plus HuntCast 2.0 with customizable alerts, Whitetail 365, which gives you season dates and local rut times, as well as the best time to plant your food plots, a 15-day hunt forecast, and 40 to 50% discount on name brand products. Enter code OVERDRIVE for 20% off your membership to HuntWise.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast. It is me, Josh Mapes, tonight, co-host Mr. Kevin Rott. And tonight, we are joined by Dennis Wilhelm. What is going on, guys?
How you doing?
All right. Right. It's pretty cold out today, man. That wind got a bit chilly.
Yeah. We over here, they're saying down in the low 30s tonight. But yeah, it got cool.
See, those last two does I had, I really wanted to let them hang, but I didn't know if we had, a 50-degree day, I think, Saturday was 50 degrees. There was no way that I could let them hang through that without worrying about it, so I had to get them taken care of pretty quick.
Supposed to be in the 50s here tomorrow, too.
Oh, is it? Dennis, what part of the state are you in? You don't have to get exact, but...
I'm just outside of Detroit, Lincoln Park.
Okay, so...
Downriver.
Over that way, do you do a lot of private land or public land hunting?
I never typically hunt down here. There's actually, it's pretty crazy. They got a draw. We got Groziel right here by us.
It's what now?
And there's an island called Groziel Island.
Oh, okay.
And there, I mean, unbelievable amount of deer on it. Right this side of the river, they've got, it's called Humbug Marsh. And every 2 years they do a lottery drawing and they select, I can't remember the exact number. I think it's 4 for October and 4 for November and 4 for December. They select a person for each weekend. But they've got like 3 different spots. So in total, they might have like 30 people that hunt it. So for instance, if I drew a tag or my name was drawn, I can say, hey, I want Josh to come out and hunt with me.
Yep.
Well, the area that it's at, I believe I've actually sent you the video of that 10-pointer I had under my stand a few years ago.
I think so, yeah.
It's really random. I've actually been drawn for that twice in the last 5 years. And one was last year. And it was crazy that when I drew it, you know, I was in the accident and all that, and some guy that didn't need a handicap spot allowed me to sit in that spot. It was maybe 60 yards from my truck. But a lot of friends that I have public land or private land.
Yep.
But we're more towards like the closest area to hunt is Point Luay.
Okay.
Which is about 30 minutes from my house.
And that's public ground.
Yep. And then there's a lot of private. I mean, it's just, it's crazy private land out down here.
So your option,
Monroe County.
Your option there is either drive roughly 30 minutes to the nearest public or draw one of these hunts or be on private.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds, I mean, we've got a couple of the county parks in my area that you can draw to hunt on. And I have lived here for the last, I think I moved in here in 18, so 4 years now. I have applied the last 4 years to hunt the local park, and I have not gotten it yet. So either you guys, I mean, you said only 12 hunters?
Yeah, in fact, give me a second. I know for a fact. I've got the paperwork right here.
You know what's going to happen here, though, right? You're going to get swamped with people around there.
What's cool is how they do it. I'll send you all the information on this in a minute. How they do it is, like, they set up the blinds. You can't go in. You can't cut no trees. Can't put up a trail camera. You can't do anything. You can only hunt on the weekend that you're selected. You can only hunt does. They've got a gate. It's all gated in because it's like a federal wildlife refuge. And they give you a code. For instance, code this week might be 1111. Well, Sunday night rolls around.
You're not getting in with that.
Exactly. Might be. But next week, you'll go to use that code. Let's say you tried to sneak in. You ain't getting in because they changed that lock on Sunday night. So it's really crazy how it works. It's just like you can shoot, I think the lady set up to 4 does. And then the person that you bring with you can shoot 4 does.
Mm.
So it's a really, yeah, it's kind of wild how it works. And they're very, I mean, you can see, this is the information right here, but you can see like Detroit Wildlife Refuge, it's got to have a parking permit to be able to park there. Like it's really crazy.
Unfortunately, your odds probably just went down.
Yeah, probably. But I've taken my deer there. So if I would really like to see, and I suggested this to the DNR lady that deals with it. I really wanted to try and get kids with like special needs or something like that.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you can't have a better place than that for it.
Right.
I think so what they do is they give you a DNR, like everybody that gets drawn, and then the people that get drawn with them or the people that they pick get to come down. And the last time I went to it was 238 deer per square mile. And they say the average in the rest of the state is like 76.
Kevin, that's gotta be like city deer near you.
Yeah.
270 deer per mile.
It's crazy. Insane.
That's a lot of deer.
Yeah. They need to thin them out
now. Okay. This is kind of on topic for a lot of conversations in the last couple of weeks. Out of those 270 deer, like, give me an example of one of your sits out there. I mean, how many deer are you seeing, and what's the average doe buck?
I sat. This was.
I feel like I should edit all of this out to save you.
It stinks because, like I said, you can only shoot does. I'll send you the video here shortly.
So it is antlerless only.
Yep, you cannot shoot bucks. I seen one of the biggest bucks I've ever seen in my life walking out the first time I ever hunted there. And I had a 10-pointer, which would have been my biggest buck with my bow standing under my stand at 7:05 opening day.
I gotcha.
And on October 1st, I seen 45 deer.
Jeez, oh, Pete. And out of those 45, how many were bucks?
I think there was like 8 or 12 different bucks.
Well, that's pretty good, but that's still not quite equal.
Exactly. And what's crazy to me is if you know that there's that many deer in that area, I understand the management aspect, but I don't understand the aspect of you're bringing these people in, shoot them.
Yeah.
Like if you've got that many deer, at that point you just shoot what you can.
Yeah, kind of just to thin the herd in general, not just by thinning the antler list. But.
Yeah, you're going so far as to putting up a gate, spending the money on tree stands, all of this stuff to keep people from shooting the big bucks. You would think that hey, we did this draw. Now the people that have been lucky enough to do this draw should be lucky enough to shoot them deer at the same time.
Yeah.
Or shoot whatever comes across them.
Right.
So I never really understood that aspect of it.
Yeah. That I guess there's reasons why I don't work for the DNR or NRC.
Exactly.
I don't understand hardly any of it. So when you were coming up, did you grow up or were you born and raised in Michigan?
Yep. I was born and raised in right here in Lincoln Park.
Okay.
Been here my whole life.
Was hunting always a part of your life?
Oh yeah. It's pretty crazy. I got born to hunt tattooed right here on my chest.
Yep.
And then I got a deer tattooed all the way across my shoulders. And I've been trying to look for it and I can't find it. When I was 5 years old, me and my father hunted up in Glenny, Hoyce Lake Foot Trails. And they hunted there forever since my dad was 18. That's where my dad learned how to hunt. And I was five and my dad had bronchitis and he had left his antibiotics here. And he called my mother on the phone and said, hey, it was like 2 days before opening day. Said, hey, can you overnight my antibiotics? You know, I need them. Well, he had an old typewriter. And at 5 years old, I typed him a note. It said, Dad, please shoot me a 10-point buck. Well, he got the package. They had got it the night before opening day, but when he woke up opening morning, it was outside. So he opened it up. They were driving from my uncle's house to where the property was, and he read the note. At 7:05 the next morning, he shot a 10-pointer that's hanging on our wall, and it won Gleno's Food Bank's Big Buck Contest, and we were actually taken on to Fred Trost. Fred Trost Big Buck Night, and I won a painting. It's still at my house, never been out of the package. That deer is hanging on the wall, and my father still has that letter.
That's awesome. That was what year?
It was, man, I was five, so it was 32 now, 27 years ago.
That's awesome.
That's insane.
Deer mount still looked pretty good after 27
years? Oh, yeah. My dad had it done by a guy, I think he was out of like Farmington Hills at the time. He was one of the best in the state. The deer just looks unbelievable.
So what
I'll
about
take a picture
your
here shortly and send it.
What about your first deer experience?
My first one, my dad was never a big bow hunter, and I got into bow hunting. I just out of a whim, kind of. In fact, I think I've seen you speak with a guy, Kevin Solomon. He goes by Dog. He runs beagles and stuff. I met him a long time ago. They used to have an archery range over in Taylor, Michigan, and I met him there. He got me set up with my first bow, and I don't think I shot a deer until I was like 16 or 17 with my bow. My first deer with my rifle was a spike, actually. It was funny. Me and my dad went out and set up our blinds, same place out in Glenny. We would go out like 3 weeks before opening day, and we'd set up our blinds because we were so far back, it didn't matter. Like, my dad had only ever seen two people out there, and they were lost.
Yep.
And I got one of them little doghouse blinds, tied it up and everything, and had a real bad windstorm the night before. And we went out, got out to my spot, and I sat on a ridge, and my dad sat on a ridge so he could see me. We got to my blind. My blind wasn't there. I said, Dad, what do I do? I said, well, I guess you're sitting with me. Well, being that young, you know, I'm falling asleep, everything else in the blind. And he woke me up. I'm facing this way, and he's facing this way, and he taps me. Oh, there's deer down between us, or down between where, you know, you would be sitting and me. And I kind of woke up, and yeah, it's not real funny. Well, when I picked my head up, I was kind of groggy, and I looked out, and there's a deer standing there. And I said, Dad, there's a deer. No, there ain't. So I grabbed my gun. I said, Dad, there's a deer. No, there ain't. Boom! Let one sing. My dad almost jumped out of the blind. What the hell are you doing? And I watched a deer go out, fall over. I didn't know it was a spike, and all we had doe tags and all that up my first deer. And he got out of the blind. And he's like, where was the deer at? And I'm pointing. He goes, just stay here. I'm like, okay. So he starts walking towards where I told him the deer was. And then I start walking towards where I seen the deer go down. And he turned around and seen me and made a beeline for the deer. And, oh my God, you shot a buck. It's your first deer. And it was just, it was hilarious, man. But there's a lot of crazy stories we had back there that just, one I'll never forget. It was the year after that. We were sitting at my uncle's house and we were watching Brock Lesnar on the Outdoor Channel. And this was before everybody really knew that he was an avid hunter. He was just on one of these kick-up shows. And a deer comes walking out. A deer comes running out. And Brock Lesnar goes, hey, really loud. And the deer stopped and he shot it. I told my dad, you know what, it'd be funny to do that. Well, sure enough, 2 days later, we had four doe tags between us. And two does come off a side ridge. And if I would have let them keep coming, they would have went down between me and my dad. Well, I shot the first one behind the shoulder. One behind her took off running to her left. She's running. I shoot on the run. Gun jams. I'm trying to get her to stop, trying to get the gun to unjam. So what do? As loud as I can, I yell, hey. Deer stops, and she sticks her neck out from behind a tree. I get the gun fixed. I put it on her neck, and I shoot, and I drop. Well, like I said, we were close to each other. So my dad, what the hell are you doing? I said, shooting a deer? He goes, well, where are you at? I said, I'm by my deer. He goes, no, you're not. I said, yeah, I am. He goes, I'm standing next to it. I said, oh, I'm by the second one I shot. He goes, what the hell were you yelling hey at? I said, Brock Lesnar did it and it worked. He goes, you gotta be shitting me. I said, nope. Yeah. So it's great to shoot deer, but when you're 4.5 miles back and you got 80-pound backpacks on, it sucks.
It sucks dragging deer more than a couple hundred yards anyway.
Oh yeah. Had an old Cabela's cart that we took about 3.5 miles in, but after that we called it the hills because it was literal nothing but this.
Yeah,
but we shot our deer every year. We never seen people. We were so far back that people would come in 2 miles, 2.5 miles, and they'd push them right to us. You couldn't, where we were at, you couldn't take nothing but cross-country skis or foot. You couldn't take a horse. You couldn't take side by side, a four wheeler, nothing. So
a lot of people didn't want to walk that far.
Yeah, and when they did walk that far, they pushed them back towards us.
Yep, I noticed that too. Like I try to get to the woods on public. I try to get there at least an hour before light, like set up an hour before light, and it's kind of fun to watch because you sit there in the dark and you can see everybody else walk into the woods with their lights on. It's like, get out your maps, mark where they're located. Okay, I know where they're at. I don't need to hunt over there because they're going in there. I do that all the time. And the ridge that I've killed my last two does on, everybody just walks right past it and blows right by. And as soon as they get down there, we can already tell that the deer are coming because we can hear them coming through the leaves and stuff. They're pushing them up back to us where we're already set up. I just kind of like working off people like that.
I got a couple buddies that were really, really down on their luck. When I tell you down on their luck, one of my buddies had felonies, had all kinds of stuff. And a kid turned his life around, started asking me about hunting a couple years ago. And I tried to give him every bit of knowledge I could give him. I mean, everything from not getting skyline to just anything I could help him with. And he called me a couple weeks ago and he shot his first deer. A nice little six pointer. And I mean, you could hear it in his voice, you know, for someone 32 years old that went through, he's been to prison, he's been to jail, you know, he's been locked up, lost his kids at some points, like almost divorced. And then now him and his family have a house out towards, like Brooklyn, Michigan. They're doing great. They got farm animals. They just had another baby. And he texts me all the time. He's out in the woods.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that he was having him and my neighbor actually that live across the street where we talk all the time, us me and my neighbor talk, and then me and this other kid talk. And I always told him the same thing. Oh, man, I'm getting these deer on camera at 7:15, 7:30. And I tell him, you know, push in a little deeper. Get your camera in a little deeper. You'll start seeing they're transitioning or they're staging before they get to you.
Yep.
So, you know, push in another 150, 200, 250 yards. Don't push in too far, but you'll start seeing, oh, man, I pushed in 200 yards. And now I'm getting that deer at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
Because he's staying right in that little area and you're going to get the chance to kill him. And that's what's crazy is both of these guys, like I never put, and this is on my kid's, like on my kid's name. I never once even considered me shooting a decent deer this year.
Yeah.
I'll bet you I could pull up 100 messages where I text my neighbor like, man, I can't wait till you shoot this deer. Like, I'm rooting for you. You know, you're busting your butt. You're out there all the time. Like, I cannot wait for the message that you send me that you got. And every day it was a little bit more, hey, man, I pushed in 50 yards. Now I got a couple scrapes. Now I got a couple rubs.
Yep.
Now I got them daylight. Now I got this. And then when it happened for me, I was like, why did this happen to me? Like, I've been rooting these guys on.
That's probably, you know, why.
Like, I've shot a lot of deer, but nothing big enough. It's always been an ongoing thing with my dad is I shot a really nice 8-pointer a few years ago and a 7-pointer with my bow. And I always asked him, you know, that one to put on the wall. And he told me when I was about 17 or 18, when I shot that nice 8-pointer, he goes, when you shoot one good enough, you'll know it's time to put it on the wall. And when I tell you about what happened, you'll know it was, I knew.
Right. Well, let's fast forward from your childhood and get into the roughly August timeframe of 2021. Your future from that point on was probably about to be altered in a way. So go ahead and tell us what happened last year.
So I've been an avid motorcycle rider forever. Grew up around it with my dad and all that. Coaching city football. I put on a picnic. We do this local picnic or carnival, and they had canceled it because of COVID. And when I was growing up, that was always a thing for all the football players before they went back to school to get to know everyone. And I put on a picnic. And after the picnic, I got on my motorcycle, came home, and a buddy of mine called and said, hey, his mother had been battling cancer for like 5 years and told me that she had passed away. And it was August 29th. And I still had the bike parked out front. I had pitchers the next day for football. And I got on the bike and I went out and I hung out with them for a little bit. And at 12:26 in the morning, a lady pulled out in front of me and collided with her on the bike. It was bad, man. I broke 7 bones in my face, 3 bones in my leg. I cut my right wrist pretty much off, 8 ribs, and I was just tore up. And my father didn't know about it until 7:30 that morning. I had actually flatlined twice in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. They don't know how I survived. And I was supposed to be in the hospital for 3.5 months. And I was out in 10.5 days. And on the 11th day, I was on the football field in a wheelchair coaching 7, 8, 9-year-old football.
So is that because the injuries weren't as bad as they thought?
No.
When they told you 3 months?
They told me, this is the nurse's exact words, I don't know what the hell kind of blood you have, but can I have some? They couldn't believe it. They just didn't know. They said, there was a guy that had pretty much the same injuries as me and wouldn't get out of the bed. And I'm not like that. If I can get up and move, that's that's what I'm going to do.
Approximately what speed do you think you were going when you hit this car?
They say I was doing between 60 and 80.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember anything, but that's kind of all it is. But I'll tell you one thing. When I was in the hospital, they said, you know, I made a promise to my father when I was 12, said I would never, ever miss an opening day of rifle season with him. So the doctor came in the day before I got released, and he goes, I had, you can see my wrist kind of, it's pretty,
yep,
pretty jacked up, and there's scars all over, and he asked me, he said, you got to set goals, what's one of your goals? And I said, well, I'm going to go hunting. And they all laughed at me, and I said, what's so funny? He said, no, you're not. I said, okay. So I am. And it just so happens that the drawing for that hunt near me was like the week that I got out is when you found out if you're drawn or not. I found out and I went through every parameter I could, contacted everybody I could. They got me that handicapped spot. Me and the guy switched. And I sat in a blind with a leg brace on and cut an old pair of camo pants with a fully immobile leg and using my dad's crossbow. I bought one of them bog chairs. This ain't a pitch for them, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you have a kid or anything like that that you want to get shooting, that is by far, I mean, you can do, it's unbelievable what you can do with them things. You can put any gun, any crossbow, anything in that thing, and it, I wouldn't have been able to hunt last year if it wasn't for that thing.
Yep.
So, and then rifle season rolled around. The year before we had lost, it was the same area, about 20 minutes from where I had sent you the vocals of them coyotes sitting in my dad's living room.
Mm-hmm.
We had lost that property, a bunch of family stuff happened. And the year before my accident, we got a call from a guy and he said, you know, come out and hunt our property. So we did. And the year before my rifle season, or the year before my accident, we shot a couple deer. And then last year we called him and said, you know, hey, are we still allowed to come out? He said, yeah. So I went to a local gun range, took that chair, took my 30-06, and I said, well, I know I have to shoot, and told the guy at the gun range what was going on. He said, if you think that I'm going to make you pay $1 to shoot, he said, in fact, we want a video after everything you've been through, the fact that you're able to shoot, we want a video. I said, okay. So they let me shoot, and we ended up hunting last rifle season. I got a couple small does, nothing big, but the chance to be out there was just, I mean, if, once I send you these pictures later of what I looked like last year there compared to this year, there's a lot of older guys that hunt in the camp, and even they said, like, you didn't look good last year. Like, you look like death. Yeah, I think it was 3 months after I had died twice and all the injuries and stuff. I still had metal plates in my arm in November. I didn't get them taken out until 3 weeks after I hunted last year.
What hand do you, what hand's your trigger hand?
My right hand.
So did you convert yourself to be using your left hand for the year?
Nope.
So your hand was completely functional in that amount of time with the damage you did to it?
Nope. It's never, ever going to be functional again, they don't think. I'm classified as paralyzed from my elbow down. You can see I don't have, my fingers won't straighten out.
Okay.
My thumb's stuck like that. And it was way, I mean, it's bad now, but it was way worse last year.
Yeah, I mean, it could be way worse than that now.
Did one of these. This is how I shoot.
Yeah.
Put my hand up and get on the gun and shoot.
So, but you can squeeze a trigger with that finger.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you still feel it?
I can feel it in this finger. I have no feeling whatsoever. In fact, I was at a buddy's house earlier. They just got a new puppy. And the puppy was biting my pinky. And I never felt it. I could see him biting. And he bit my other fingers. I knew he was biting hard, but I never felt it in my pinky.
That's got to be, I mean, unimaginable either way, but just like hard to retrain yourself almost.
Yeah, they said there was a 98% chance they weren't even going to reattach my hand.
It looks like you cut it almost all the way off based on the scar.
Yeah, I cut it. In fact, are you on your phone or are you on a tablet?
Oh, I'm on the computer right now.
Okay, give me one second. I'll show you exactly what it looked like.
Yeah, I don't mind gross pictures.
Okay. Well, you'll be amazed. So now, when you see that, you're going to be...
I'm going to look right...
I'll let you look right now before
yeah,
you
I'm not afraid.
Consider.
Oh, yeah, that ain't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Kevin, you want to see? I'll just hold them up. Sure. That's not supposed to be like that, I don't think. And then there's the rest.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was.
So this is a picture of Dennis's face. And yeah, that one. We'll put that one away.
Yeah, that's YouTube. That's that whole YouTube banning blood and all that. They wouldn't like that. But and that's in black and white.
I mean, take this as complimentary as it can be. Your face doesn't look like it had injury.
That's what's crazy is the only two scars I got are right. I don't know if you can see them right here. I got two little scars.
Your eyes.
Yep, right between my eyes.
Dude, you're lucky to be alive.
I thank God every single day. And like when I sent you I sent that to Marion Buckpole. And just like I said, once I get into this year and explaining it, try and hold back the tears, but I don't know how well that's going to work.
Well, we can get into it because it is almost December. It's the 28th of November right now. Did you do any bow hunting this season?
No, I have not pulled a bow back in 2 years. I got a Hoyt, got an older Hoyt carbon matrix. It set it. I think it's 52 or 55 pounds. And the reason I bought that was because I had a bad left shoulder for years. In fact, I got to have a right shoulder surgery coming up December 28th. And I put that off because of rifle hunting. The doctor already done all my other shoulder surgeries. And as soon as he said, well, we'll do it November 8th. And I said, no, you won't. And he goes, oh yeah, you're a hunter. We'll do it December 28th. I said, all right, sounds good.
That works.
So, I have not pulled a bow back. I want to, but with all the other injuries, I gotta wait until everything's pretty much
didn't want to pretty much crossbow done. Or anything for it.
Yeah, I could hunt with a crossbow. I've always said that unless I am forced to, I would like to shoot my compound.
Yep.
I've always been an avid bow hunter, so
I'm the same way.
That's
I got a couple questions for you, Dennis. In during your accident, were you fully suited? I mean, did you have a helmet, leather?
No, I did not. What's crazy, they said if I would have had a helmet, the lady was driving an 02 Jeep Cherokee. And they said if I would have had a helmet, I probably would have died on impact. I would have broke my neck because I wore a full face. Mm-hmm. And the weight of the helmet would have pushed my head down and it would have caught the top of the car. I actually went 150 yards in the air and landed in the road.
Jesus.
Did you end up with any TBI off that accident?
No, and that's what's surprising. They did all of the tests. They've done all kinds of CAT scans and MRIs and everything, and they said that there is zero TBI at all.
TBI?
Traumatic brain injury.
Oh, gotcha. Yep. I have that at all. I can't think of it.
Now, did you have any problems with recoil shooting a rifle because of your injuries?
I did, and I didn't. So I switched to that bog chair or whatever last year. This year I didn't use it. Last year I did. And the hard part is my hand. Like I said, I don't have feeling in my hand. So no matter what I'm doing, I have to pick the gun up, or this year I had to pick the gun up, make sure to get on the gun, make sure where my two fingers are, and then I can't push the safety on my gun because it's up by the bolt. I can't push it with my thumb. So I'd have to get the gun up, push it with my other opposite hand, and then get on it and shoot. I did have recoil problems, obviously, because of my shoulder and my arm. Last year, not so much, but it's hard to explain. I do and I don't because of my hand. Like, I can't shoot my pistol. I have a CPL. I actually carry, 90% of the time, I carry my AR pistol because it's just easier for me to control. I carry a Glock 2340, and it's just too violent. I can't, there's nothing I can do with it. You know, it's one of them things that if I shot that gun, my dad has a 44 Magnum. We went down to Florida after my accident, and it was a gun that him and a friend had. And I wanted to shoot it because I knew the history of the gun, and I knew what it meant to my dad and what it meant for him to get it and all that. And I shot it 3 times, and I mean, I literally cried for 5 hours straight afterwards because it just, it destroyed me.
Now, would you be able to switch to left hand? Would that be better for you, or could you do that?
I could possibly. I taught myself how to bowl left-handed. I broke my arm. I taught myself how to bowl, how to write, how to do all that when I was a kid, left-handed. I can throw a football decent left-handed. I can do a lot of stuff left-handed. And I probably could, but it was the thing of the doctors told me I wouldn't do it, so I had to prove them wrong.
I get that.
The doctors told me I'd never ride a motorcycle again. The day they said that, it's been my dad's dream to go to Daytona. I went out and I bought a Harley. This past February, I went out, I bought a Harley. I came home, I told my dad to pack his bags. He said, for what? And we went and took a 17-day trip to Daytona.
So you went back on a bike.
Yeah, I have since sold it because I knew I had a bunch of surgeries coming up. But it was one of them things, like, you tell me that I can't do it, I will prove you wrong.
What kind of bike were you driving during the accident?
I had a 17 ultra limited low. So it was, I broke the frame in 3 spots. It was violent.
Kevin, is accident any reason why you don't ride anymore? I mean, the thought of an accident?
No. Matter of fact, I would love to have a bike again, but it was mainly the cost because I couldn't really pay to have it fixed or replaced. I just haven't had the money to buy another bike again, but no, it would not stop me from riding again.
Just imagine how many coyotes you could throw on one of them suckers.
On the type of bike I ride, not many.
You could put a couple on there. Bungee cords. Yeah,
I mean, I had other people ride with me, so I know I could put one or two on there.
I had a buddy that shot a doe. His old lady, this is no joke. He rides with a local club around me, and his old lady took the truck, told him, you ain't going hunting, you ain't got the truck. So he's got a Road Glide, a big Harley dresser. He took the bike, went bow hunting. Believe it or not, he shot a doe and put it on the back of his bike and pulled up on their front lawn.
Hey, you do what you got to do.
Could not believe it.
A nice thing about throwing a doe on the back of a Harley is you don't have to oil the meat. It's already oiled.
Exactly.
That sounds kind of like a hit. All right, so Dennis, let's say it is November 14th. What's going through your head November 14th this year?
So November 14th. Well, started off as we wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. First year for taking my little brother, he's 8, his name's Hunter. Taking my little brother up for deer camp with us. And the very first thing I do is, you know, say hi to my old man. And I turn on Escanab on the Moonlight at 5 o'clock in the morning, as loud as it can be.
Dude, I still can't get myself to watch this.
And I know when I, you know, it's funny for people to tell you they know every word. No, I know every word. to the point where my little brother was chasing me around the house at 5 o'clock, pissed as all pissed could be, because I quoted every word. And we packed the truck up and we take off and we head north around Marion area. And we had a little bit of upkeep. The good part about where we're at, and with, I mean, I guess you take the good with the bad. You know, I used to walk 4 miles out. That's how I grew up hunting. Now where we're at, they got heated blinds. They're 6x6. There's a heater in there. There's a urinal in there. My father's had 3 back surgeries, and I can't handle the cold like I used to. And I knew my little brother was going to be with us. I went to a local carpet place. Guy's an avid hunter. Didn't know that he was an avid hunter. I picked some random carpet place near me. The guy that works there said, yeah, you know, you got to speak with Bob. He's an avid hunter. And I went in, and the guy comes walking out with a $175 piece of carpet. It's 12x6. And I go, or 12x12. I go, how much do I owe you? And he goes, my worker told me what you've been through. He goes, you ain't paying me a dollar for it. So get the carpet in, get the insulation in, kind of unpack and, you know, get things going for the next morning. Made a bunch of food. We did it different. My little brother wanted to make s'mores in the blind if we shot a deer this year. So I had got s'mores and all that stuff. We made breakfast burritos. And fast forward to opening morning, we get out there. We're out at about 6 o'clock, turn the heater on. About 6:30, my little brother's snoozing like Marvin.
Attaboy.
I hear something over my shoulder, and I look, and there's two small does standing there. I'm trying to wake him up, and he won't have no part of it. So one takes off to my right, and the other one, she's standing 5 yards from the bottom of the blind. I mean, she's so close in the picture, the camera would only zoom in on the blind. I couldn't even get her in the camera. And I watched them till about 7:10, 7:15. And they were both heading this way, and they turned back and they started going back the way they came from. And the whole time they were looking behind them. And all of a sudden they take off back to where they come from, and here come two more does. Well, my dad's sitting about 300 yards from us in a blind we had just put up. And I texted him, I said, hey, you know, they want us to take does. They got crop kill tags for does. I said, you want me to shoot that big doe or what? And I knew I didn't want to shoot her, but at the same time, like, I knew that they had the tags and they wanted does killed. I said, you know, we got enough time. We're in a cornfield. Like, we're going to see deer. Let's hold off. Well, about 2 minutes later, I hear something behind me. And I turned the other way, the opposite way of the does, and a 6-pointer come busting out. And he had looked like he had been ran off by something, because he wasn't having it. And the deer was like bright orange. He looked like a highlighter. It was crazy. He looked like he was wearing hunter orange. So I turned back around. The does weren't snorting or wheezing or anything. They were just acting really, really weird, making weird noises like I had never heard before. And they all kind of trot out about 50, 60 yards out of the tree line. And I wake my little brother up. And since the kid was 3, I've always messed with him and said, hey, buddy, do you know how hunting works? And he goes, no. I said, meh. And then he'd go, dump team. So where we're at, you got to have 4 more on one point or on one side. And I wake him up. He starts watching these does. And all of a sudden, this deer comes out. I can't tell how big it is. I know it's big. I know it's got 4 more on one side. I know I'm shooting it. But I don't know how big the thing is. You know, it comes out. And it looked like something out of a picture. You know how the deer comes out and it's got its front legs stretched out. It's other leg kind of backed in a little bit, and then he's got his head up, yeah, almost scratching his back with his antlers. That's exactly what it was like. He had his nose up in the air sniffing for them does. And where I'm sitting, there's a big oak, and it's got a weird branch that hangs down and kind of like a U. So I had to let him come out, and unbeknownst to me, I believe he was making that rub right there on that corner, that picture of that rub that I sent you. Yeah. Because them does were looking right at that corner, and that's kind of right where he came out from, and I believe he was running that six-pointer off of them.
Yeah.
And I let him get out past that branch and did exactly like I told my little brother, man. He put his head up. As soon as he put his head up, I shot him right in the neck and he dropped right there. Well, like I said, I knew he was decent. I figured a decent 8-pointer, maybe a decent okay 10-pointer. You know, I never thought, hey, he's a 10-pointer. Hey, he's, I just knew he was a decent deer.
How far was the shot?
Probably about 60 yards.
Okay.
But when I sent you them pictures, you see how dark racked he is?
Yep.
It was 7:25 overcast with snow showers.
Yeah.
So you can imagine it'd be, and where we're at, the deer is just as dark as the cornfield. Because corn had just been cut and it was all nothing but mud. So he's the same color as that mud, pretty much. So is his antlers.
Yeah, his antlers, definitely.
Yeah, they're real dark. So I shot, and I told my little brother, stay here. I'm going to make sure he's down. You know, I've had that happen where I shot a deer, and it got up, took off on me. So I go running over there, and I get to the deer, and I instantly start bawling my eyes out. And I'm freaking out. I never picked him up, never touched him or nothing. But just, I didn't even count what he was. I knew he was big. Like, I got up probably from 10 yards away from him, and I said, oh, my God, like, that's a good-looking buck. So I called him over, and he comes running over there. And my dad, I don't know it at the time because I'm so focused on just the moment with my little brother. Like, obviously, my dad, I knew, was walking over as well, but I'm yelling and screaming. I'm crying from just, you know, to go from dying and thinking you'll never hunt again, you'll never have that moment with your little brother or your father again, to pushing so hard. Sorry.
Oh, I get it. I definitely understand it.
Pushing so hard for your friends and stuff to shoot big deer, and you not even consider yourself like, hey, I could shoot a good buck or something. To go from here to here and have my little brother walk up, and the first deer he ever sees killed is that deer.
Yeah.
The biggest buck I've ever shot after putting so much heart and soul and everything into it, and getting back to not even a quarter of what I was before. You know, I don't consider myself an avid hunter because I can't bow hunt. Like, I praise guys like you and like my neighbor and my buddy that get out there and bow hunt. Like, I would love to do it. I'm just not physically able to, and it upsets me. Like, I want to, but I can't. But to go from fighting so hard and wishing so much for everybody else to at 7:25 in the morning standing over a deer that I didn't expect was just unbelievable. And as I'm screaming and hollering, my dad, I didn't know, was yelling, are you okay? He thought I shot myself or something. And it was just all of them emotions of not knowing that I'd get that chance, for having my dad there, for having my little brother there. And just for 40 minutes, I cried standing there in the middle of a cornfield with my dad and my little brother. Just cried. Because I never, ever expected that. And wondered, like, why I was left here. Why was I saved? What did I do? What did I need to do? What purpose kept me here? And all of it hit me right there. Like, that's why. Like, that moment, the outdoors, that time, that waking up at 5 o'clock the day before and making the food and making that drive and laughing about farting and burping and giggling and, you know, it just, that moment, that event, them events leading up to that are what made that so special. It wasn't the hard nights in the hospital or the physical therapy appointments. It was just that time and having those people there.
Yeah, you overcame it and you had the right people there to make the whole thing worth that much more.
That's been a big thing for me. I've told you a lot, like getting the kids into the outdoors is a huge, huge, huge thing for me. And just how it worked was insane. And it took me, God, what? If you think about it at this point in time, 20 years to finally shoot a deer that I knew was worthy of being put on the wall.
That was the message. Finally got me a wall hanger.
Exactly. Like, and I'm not a horn hunter. Like, I can go to my house and grab you a box of antlers right now.
Yep.
You know, with deer in it that 98% of people would hang on their wall.
Yep.
It's not about that. It's, and I've said this year after year after year, I don't care if you shoot a spike or you shoot a doe. It's the raw emotion of what you shoot and what it means to you.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is I take my tablet out. Like I said, to me, it's like the Taj Mahal hunt. And it's not that I don't like it. It's just I'm not used to it. Some people, that's how they were brought up. If you have private land and you have that, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
If you have public land and you have to sit in a tree stand when it's 8 degrees outside or negative 10, there's nothing wrong with that. But I'll tell you what, I respect deer even though it's off private land just as much as I did when it was on public land.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
Because the memories are what make it matter to me. And it's funny because I pulled out my tablet, you know what? Take a tablet out in the woods. The kid's 8. So I hand him the tablet. I heat up his breakfast burrito on the heater. And I turned on Wreck-It Ralph for him. And right before he started the movie, I had a deer come out, and it was that six-pointer again. And he had came from the way he had ran from.
Man.
And he come running out, and I hit the grunt call from Bob's Custom Calls. This is no joke. I hit this grunt tube, and this deer freaks out. And he takes off running the way he comes from. Well, where we're at, they've got a deer fence up. Because them and the neighbors have a big problem, and it's just...
Oh, I see. So this is fence, high fence, huh?
No. They've got that side of their property has got a deer fence, and then they've got cattle farm. They've got cows on the other side of the property.
Yep.
So they have to have, like, an electric fence, deer fence, and a cattle fence all mixed into one. Because their cows are literally 200 yards out in front of you. So it's really weird how it's set up, but I see this six-pointer, I hit this grunt tube, and he takes off running. And this deer runs face first into this fence, full speed. And my little brother starts laughing harder than I've ever seen him laugh in my life. And we're cracking up laughing on the blind. And this is at like 9:30. So I give him the tablet, he eats his food, turns on Wreck-It Ralph. It gets right through the start of the credits, like six and a half minutes in. Here comes a doe, full speed, running past me. Here comes that six-pointer chasing her, and I can tell because he's highlighter orange. Right behind them is a seven-pointer. All of a sudden, I hear my little brother go, "He's over there, you dumped him." And I'm laughing my ass off, like this kid went from never seeing a deer get killed to the biggest deer and the biggest set of emotions he could have ever imagined 2 hours ago to meh. And then he's over here pointing like, "Oh, there he is. He went down right there, brother." Like, it just, it's so funny to me how you could go from one extreme to the other without, like, I don't know why it happened to me or why I got that lucky. But to have an 11-pointer that I can hang on the wall is going to be one to remember.
So are you by chance getting that deer scored? Did you? Are you?
My buddy that came over, so he works, his name's Jay, owns Jay's Taxidermy out of Allen Park, Michigan. He is going to score him for me. I don't think he's maybe 150, 140. Like I said, he's not mass. He's got a decent mass to him.
He looked like he was thick.
Yeah, his G2 is insane on that one side. He's got 3 points on his G2. It comes off and it does this, and then he's got his regular G2. Really, a lot of mass. But it was funny because I called him on the way home and I said, hey, you know, I finally got one I want to hang on the wall. I said, after all that I've been through, the thing that scared me most was getting home and caping that deer. And our buddy that we hunt his property was going to do it for us.
Well, not to mention, you said you neck shot it, right?
Yeah. And what was sweet is the neck shot. Every time I've ever neck shot a deer, it's put a decent hole in it. The neck shot on this deer went through and it came out just the backside of the opposite shoulder. That far down the shoulder.
So you wiped out everything.
Yeah, and I called him and I said, listen, I don't want to mess this up. Like, it would destroy me. I would be destroyed if I ruined this deer. And he came over. He got there about 10 minutes after we pulled up at home. And I measured that deer's neck, and it was 24 inches around. And he starts caping the deer, and we're standing there talking, and someone had shot that deer. It had survived. It had, like, a graze wound right here in the stomach.
Yep.
The old man that owns the property had been watching him with his bow for, like, 3.5 weeks. I didn't know it was the same deer. Had been watching him for 3.5 weeks. He'd come in at 75, 85 yards, but could never get a shot on him. And, when I shot, you know, he dropped right there. I didn't think nothing of it. I found the entry side, and came out the other side of the neck. No big deal. Well, my buddy's standing there caping out, and I've got my other neighbor that I had just started talking to that's an avid hunter come walking down, was in amazement at the deer. And we're all standing there talking. He pulls the skin down, and I'm looking at that one bullet hole, and the deer kind of turns. I'm like, damn, what the hell is that mark? And I start feeling, and I actually found the full bullet in that deer's shoulder up here.
From your gun?
From my gun.
And you said you shoot what caliber?
I shoot a 30-06. In fact, if you want to, I can keep it on. I'm 2 blocks from my house. I will pull up to my garage and get that so you guys can see it.
What grain bullet are you shooting?
So funny story about my gun is my father bought me. I told you about that 8-pointer I shot.
Yep.
That was with a Remington 770, 30-06 with a Bushnell scope from Gander Mountain. When I shot that 8-pointer, that scope blew up. That Bushnell scope blew up. It blew three rings on the inside of the scope. Three of the glass rings on it. And we sent it back. Bushnell sent us another scope. Well, the next year before rifle season, I get a phone call from a kid that I've known for 20 years playing football with. And he goes, hey, I got a Savage 30-06 I want to sell. I said, okay, you know, how much do you want for it? And he goes, I'd like $125. I said, okay. It's got an old Tasco scope on it,
Savage 30-06, come with three boxes of Remington 150 grain core lock. And he tells me that that gun is dead nuts. Well, you and I both know that's the last thing you believe is a gun's dead nuts that you just bought. Well, my dad can shoot a gnat off a fly's ass at 200 yards. He's got an old Whitefield 30-06 with a broken scope. Crosshairs are broke on it. And my dad shot that gun three times, and he put three bullets inside each other at 100 yards.
With that 30-06.
With that 30-06. Well, that doe story that I told you where I shot one and then shot the one in the neck?
Yep.
That's the first year I used that gun.
Okay.
And I've used that gun every year since. The bad part is we went up this year to take everything out a few weeks ago and try and get my little brother to shoot a rifle, which he's just not ready yet for. And we shot my gun. My gun was off by a foot and a half. We sighted it in. We went through about a half a box of ammo. So if you think about it, I've had this box, these boxes of Remington Corlock for 10 years.
Since you bought the gun.
Since I bought the gun. And that's the ammo that I shot that deer with.
Dang.
Like $125. It shouldn't work that way.
No, but it really should. You hope it does every time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not supposed to. But
I get my guns from Kevin, so I know they're going to be right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I shouldn't be shooting deer with 120. First of all, I should never got the gun for 125 bucks.
Probably not. That's a
beautiful gun. Absolutely beautiful.
Kevin, you got any questions?
No, I was just going to comment. That's the gun I shot my first deer with, was a Savage 110 30-06 I bought for 200 bucks with a Tasco scope on it.
I love that Tasco scope.
That was an in-store inbox setup.
Mine wasn't, but it was, I mean, same type of thing, but yeah. I shot my first, I've shot two deer with that, including my very first deer was with that setup.
I have never, ever shot a Knot 6.
Tell you what, I'll never shoot anything, I don't think, besides for Knot 6. The only gun I'd ever consider was a Creedmoor. And the reason there's a reason behind it, is I know that my little brother would be able to shoot it.
Yeah.
I want to get him into a gun, and I've told my dad this, I want to get him into an AR-style gun that you don't have to change every year. You know, it really sucks nowadays that you have to buy a youth gun, and then in 5 years you got to sell it, and you got to buy a bigger gun when you could simply buy an AR-style gun, and a kid could grow up with that.
So that bullet right there, he's right now showing us a bullet. What deer is that one from?
That is from that 11 pointer.
Kevin, that's like a perfect mushroom, isn't it?
It is.
That's what you guys want to see.
Good expansion, probably good weight retention.
Now, what did you say earlier about the velocity of the 30-06?
For the 150 grain bullet, he's probably going to be pushing close to 3 grand, I think, because 165 grain loads, I think, are 27, 28. So he's probably close to 3,000.
I've heard they always did good on deer, but I've never shot one, never been around one.
Almost everybody.
What's crazy is you can see, I mean, it's literally right down to the butt end of the thing. It's perfect.
Corlock has always been a really good bullet.
Yeah.
Yep. You can't complain about that bullet at all.
I was in an Ace Hardware the other day getting a tube for a tire, and they had a box of the 12-gauge Remington 2 3/4-inch sluggers, the rifled shotgun slugs that used to be, I think I've probably still got boxes that are like $2.99 for five. They were almost $9 for a box of five of those.
Yep.
Like, holy cow. This is why I don't shoot anything anymore.
There you go. There's that 7-pointer from this year. That's the second one.
Yeah, that's a nice year still.
Seven.
So, Dennis, after the year you've had, what's your hopes for 2023?
I'd really like to get my little brother out there shooting something. I don't know what yet. It all depends on what I can afford and what I'm able to get them into. My big thing is, sorry, one second, is we bought him a spotting scope from a guy off Facebook Marketplace for $30. Bought him a spotting scope, and him and my father went out the afternoon hunt after I shot them two bucks. And he was picking up turkeys at 150, 200 yards with that thing.
Nice.
So I figured, I know it was a crazy idea, but if he could do that with a spotting scope, then that's great training for a young kid to learn how to use a scope. And he was able to do it. So hopefully we can get him into a gun that he's able to handle and not be afraid of.
So your goal for next year is
putting him on a deer. So that's my goal. Yep, put him on a deer. And I would like to be able to bow hunt. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I would like to be able to do it.
Well, it sounds like he should have decent luck being a high fence operation.
I wish that was the case.
No, it sounds like, I mean, you guys got a good property and it's got quite a bit of deer on it, so hopefully everything just plays out right.
Yes, sir. I'm hoping so.
Kevin, anything to end?
No, it's pretty inspiring story, and you know, it's cool to hear that. Glad you made it through, and glad you're able to still participate in the things that you love. You're pretty fortunate.
Yeah, what a crappy time. I mean, not that it was a good thing in general, but right at the end of August, a month before bow season, and that happens, like, in 2020 when I had my hospital stay for diverticulitis, it was like May, June, something like that, that I was out. And they told me at that point I probably wouldn't be deer hunting that year. And I pretty much did the same. Like, yeah, you told me I wouldn't, now I'm gonna. And I killed my biggest buck, that split beam 12 point. I killed that year.
Yep, I remember that deer. In fact, I was talking to you on the phone, or talking to you via messenger as soon as you shot that deer.
Yep. Nope, that's sometimes just how it works, I guess. You go to the bottom for a minute and then you come back up.
Yep. Like I said, I've been hoping and praying and wishing for a good one for a long time, and then just how it worked, man. I'll never forget it.
Right. Well, congratulations, and yeah, I look forward to following how your 2023 goes, see if you can get your little brother on one.
Yes, sir, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us, Kevin. Thanks for taking time out of your night. You're probably wanting to go coyote hunting or something.
No, not tonight.
Not me either, oddly enough. I don't want a coyote hunt tonight. I think I might try to go out maybe this weekend because it opens back up to normal. Oh, we'll see. Depends on what landowners say I can go and which ones say their property's still off limits. But until next week, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next time on the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast.